Good morning. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Carl. I've been part of Sha-Tin Church here for about a year and a half now. And it's my pleasure today to come and talk to you about today's passage from John chapter 3. Now, the first thing I want to do is I want to ask you, have you ever been in a situation where someone has explained something to you and it's just gone whoosh, way over your head? You know, they've finished explaining it to you and you are no better off than when they started. Or maybe you've been on the other side. You've tried to explain something to someone and no matter how many times you try to explain it, they just don't get it. I had an experience a bit like that last week. I was sitting in a training for a mission trip that I'm part of going to Japan next month. And we were doing the session on learning Japanese, which is all very well. Now, the only problem for me was that this session was in Cantonese. Now, I can get by okay with Cantonese, but my Cantonese is nowhere near the level where it needs to be able to learn another language. And so, as you can imagine, there are a lot of things there that I was really struggling to keep up with. But where things really got difficult was when they started talking about the equivalent Japanese phrases to Cantonese slang phrases. Now, the problem there that you have is that to understand these phrases, it's not enough just to know what they mean. You really have to live in the culture to know what it's about. Let me try out a couple of them for you. One of them is otai. Now, some of the younger people over there, they know what I'm talking about. But for, you know, us white people, or the people perhaps over 40 or 50, you know, this one will maybe go just completely miss you, because this one comes from the anime or manga community. Now, what happens if you've seen the Japanese cartoons, where these guys, they have, every cartoon, they have eyes that are as big as dinner plates, and a tiny little mouth, and maybe no nose. Now, maybe it's just what people look like in Japan, but that's certainly what they look like in the Japanese comics. Now, well, you'll notice that they have very expressive faces, and their mouth will change completely. And so if they're smiling, their mouth, which was tiny, this little big, suddenly, you know, stretches out past their ears. And if they're surprised, their mouth is a huge, big O. And so this is where this otai comes from. It means O mouth. And so this person has an O mouth. And so what that means is it means something like flabbergasted, surprised, amazed. But if you don't know the anime and manga, you just cannot understand what they're talking about, even if you understand the words. You know, another one that I came across, and they spent a long time explaining this to me, and I said, doesn't mean this. They said, no, it doesn't mean that. I said, well, doesn't mean this. They said, no, it doesn't mean that. Was watge. Now, this one comes from the computer game community. And what people do in these computer games, sometimes these people are really, really good at computer games. They just can absolutely get through the whole computer game, no problems. And what they will do is that they will go and hang out with these people who are just starting off the computer game, maybe in these online games. And they will go and beat them up and take all their stuff on the computer games. And so that is called watgate. And basically it means bullying, but in such a way where you compete at a level that's way below the level that you should be able to, way below your actual level, so that you can do much better than everyone else. Now, I find this interesting because what it's talking about is something similar, somewhere in between hustling and bullying in a sort of a Western context. Well, I found it interesting that these people would use bullying in a sort of a computer game. Well, they actually use it in an academic sense as well. Like if you take a beginner's course when you really know everything. And it's amazing that in the culture that these guys are in, they bully academically. In the culture I came from, people bully with their fists. Yeah. It's just a really different culture. And unless you're in the culture, it's really hard to understand this. Now, maybe all of what I've said has gone whoosh way over your head. and you've totally missed it. In which case, this can be an object lesson of how some things can sometimes go whoosh way over your head. And this is exactly the sort of situation that we were in with Jesus and Nicodemus. But before we get too deep into Jesus and Nicodemus conversation, I want to give things a bit of background here. Nicodemus was a member of the Pharisees. Now, you've probably heard of them. They were the people who were always having a bit of agitation with Jesus. But you must understand that in the eyes of most of the people in that time, the Pharisees were the good guys. These were the people who were good, upstanding citizens. They gave money for religious projects, often a lot of money. They were the people who preached against immorality in their times. They led the calls for people to commit to God. If we were to translate that sort of person today, that person would be a good church-going person. Maybe a deacon or an elder or a pastor. They'd certainly be strongly anti-abortion. Someone who is standing against the rising tide of sex and violence on TV. Someone who gives and encourages others to give to God and to church and worthy charities. They would certainly be a part of movements like the Moral Majority and so on. I hope you get the point. These people would be role models for us. People would say, you should be more like them. That's a good person to base your life on. What they're doing is good. In the eyes of the people who cared about God in Israel in Jesus' time, these guys were the good guys. They were the heroes. They didn't compromise. They weren't corrupt. They certainly weren't one of the hated tax collectors who toadied up to the Romans at the same time as they were ripping off their fellow Israelites. They certainly weren't the type to get drunk every weekend or to hang out with prostitutes like some people did. And Nicodemus, well, Nicodemus was one of the leaders of this group of people. He was one of a group of 70 of the top spiritual leaders of Israel. In today's context, he's like being one of those top pastors who everyone's heard of, and if you go into a local Christian bookstore, you can see a row of books with their name on it. Nicodemus was one of the top of the good guys in the time of Israel, in the time of Jesus in Israel. Now, a lot of these Pharisees, although they look like good guys, they were in fact in this game for what they could get out of it. Whether it be the power, or the fame, or the kudos, or whatever. A lot of these guys were in it for that. But Nicodemus, he wasn't like that. Nicodemus was a genuine guy. He was a real good guy. He wasn't one of those Pharisees that, because they were threatened by Jesus' teaching, tried to trap him, or tried to think of a way to have him killed. Now, he wasn't one of those kind of Pharisees. He came up to Jesus on this night to pay respect to Jesus. He commended Jesus. "We know you are a teacher from God. No one could perform the signs you perform unless God were with him." He gives Jesus credit. He respects Jesus. And he lets him know. And how does Jesus reply? Oh, Jesus tells Nicodemus that he must be born again. That's a bit of a strange thing. Born again is a term we hear a lot these days in church, but often we don't really know what it means. It's one of those phrases that perhaps we've heard so often that it's lost its meaning to us. For most people, when they say born again, they mean the same thing as Christian. Are you born again? Yes, I'm a Christian. That's often the sort of meaning that we have to it. Or we use it in one of those sort of redundant phrases like born again Christian, as if there were another type. But there's so much more meaning to the phrase than that. The first thing is it means starting again. When you're born, You're starting off. In chapters 3 and 4 of John, there are actually two very different stories of people who Jesus gives an offer to start again. The woman of Samaria was one of those people who desperately needed and wanted a fresh start. Someone who had been in serial relationships and was now, as it would have been quoted perhaps a few years ago, I don't know if some of the young people are familiar with this one, to get one back from the other side, living in sin. And she was so embarrassed by her life that she just avoided all contact with people, avoided all social contact. And Jesus gave her an offer to start again. And she was someone who desperately wanted and desperately needed that. But Nicodemus, well, Nicodemus was successful. He was important. He was respected. He was powerful. And Jesus told him, he said, well, what you need is to be born again, a fresh start. You need to start again. Now, I can imagine that Nicodemus' feeling might have been something like if you're doing something really important or significant, like maybe you're installing a major update on your computer, and then one of your kids comes and flicks off the power switch. And all this frustration builds up inside of you, and you say, now I have to start all over again. You know, would you want to start again once you've sort of reached right up to that level? You've done everything right, you've got everything in place, and someone does something where you have to start again. And you're like, no, I don't want to start again. I've put so much into this. This is where Nicodemus is at. He's gotten further than probably just about anyone else. And someone tells him he has to start again. Jack Higgins, the famous author of The Eagle Has Landed, once said, when he was asked what the one thing he knows now that he wished he knew as a small boy was. And his answer, he said, when you get to the top, there's nothing there. Boris Becker talked about after he had won his second Wimbledon, he struggled with suicide. You can talk to so many people who have reached the pinnacle of their career. They've reached the top. They've succeeded to the point where there's nothing else. And the impression they have is, well, what else is there? Is this all there is? Nicodemus has just been told, when he's been climbing the ladder for perhaps 50 years, that the ladder's been leaning against the wrong wall. But you know, born again means more than just starting again. It means more than just a fresh start. Now, to understand this, I want you to imagine with me that you encounter a two-dimensional world, a flat world, populated by six-figure men. And you start a communication with them. You try to explain to them about the three-dimensional world that we live in with depth. And understandably, they're confused. They've never really come across anything like this. And you think, aha, I've got a good example. I'll show them a cube. You know, a cube is clearly three-dimensional. The thing is, they take a look at this cube and they say, well, I can see three quadrilaterals there. But, you know, what's so different about that? And you start to realize, well, these people, they just can't understand it. They can't comprehend what I'm talking about. And you come to the conclusion that if they're going to understand your three-dimensional world, they would need to become three-dimensional themselves. Now, this is what Jesus says when he says that we must be born of the Spirit. He says that flesh gives birth to flesh and spirit gives birth to spirit. He says a man must be born of water and of the Spirit. Now, all of us here has experienced a physical birth. We have been born as flesh. But what Jesus is saying is that we need a spiritual birth. When we're born of flesh, we're able to relate physically with people. And that's one of the important things that when babies are born, they need to do. They need those hugs and cuddles as much as they need anything else, such as the milk or the warmth. They need that attention and that physical relationship as much as they need anything else. But until we're born spiritually, we're unable to relate on a spiritual level. And since God is a spirit, it means that we're unable to relate with Him. If you didn't get it from just that one frame we saw at the beginning, there was from the film The Matrix. And in that film, Neo, he'd heard these rumours about The Matrix, but he didn't know what it was. But he knew that Morpheus was sort of like the gatekeeper to finding out about these things. And so he'd been searching for Morpheus. And so he'd finally found Morpheus. And here Morpheus was giving him what he wanted to know. What is the Matrix? And he told him, he said, I can't explain it to you. I can't tell you what it is. You need to see it for yourself. And this is what Jesus was saying to Nicodemus. It's not enough. I can't explain it to you. You need to be born again. You need to be born spiritually to understand the spiritual dimension. Just like the two-dimensional people, they need to gain that third dimension to be able to understand things like cubes and spheres. If we want to be able to understand the spiritual dimension, we must be born again. And being born again is not just something for us to understand, it's something for us to experience. It's talking about life, not a hypothesis. And so that brings us obviously to the next question. Well, how do you get born again? And Nicodemus asked things along those lines a couple of times. He said, well, yeah, I can't exactly go back into my mother's womb and, you know, get born again, can I? And then when Jesus explains to him about being born of the flesh and the spirit, he says, well, how can this be? How can this be? And Jesus gives the answer to this as he recalls to Nicodemus' mind an episode from the Israelites wandering in the desert. And you can find this in Numbers chapter 21, if you want to take a look later. Now on that occasion, the Israelites, after they had been grumbling and complaining, God had sent a plague of snakes to them. A plague of poisonous snakes, so that anyone who was bitten by the snakes got sick and died. Now Moses then prayed to God for deliverance for the Israelites, and God told him, he said, make a snake and put it on a pole to be lifted up, and anyone who looks at the snake will live. And Jesus said that in the same way, he, the Son of Man, will be lifted up like the snake in the desert. So these people, if they wanted to live, they needed to look at the very thing that was bringing their death, trusting that that would bring them life. It's a bit strange, isn't it? You know, it's like that, like what we sang before, and I'm glad, Wendy, that you mentioned this as well, because I was thinking about the exact same line. I'll never know how much it cost to see my sin up on that cross. Our sin that brings us death was lifted up on the cross in Jesus. And it's only by looking at our sin as Jesus bears it on the cross and trusting that by being able to look at it up there on that cross that we are being saved. It's only by looking and trusting as we look that we are able to be saved from our sin. As the Israelites looked at the snake, lifted up, they were saved from the power of the snakes. As we look at our sin lifted up, we can be saved from the power of our sin. This is how we are born. We are born by faith, by looking and trusting. At the moment we trust in Jesus to bear our sins up on that cross, then God, through His Spirit, births in us spiritual life. If you might like to think of it like our third dimension, it's like we've been operating in an entirely two-dimensional way, and all of a sudden God brings us in this other dimension to our lives so that we can relate to Him and we can relate to others in a spiritual way as well. And so, like Neo in the Matrix, we all come to a dilemma. Neo had to choose whether he was going to put it all on the line and give up everything he had worked for so far and begin a new life that he could not possibly understand until he had actually begun it. Our dilemma is remarkably similar. We can choose to forget about or ignore what we've heard about this spiritual life, about being born again, about the spiritual birth that Jesus talks about. We can choose to keep our well-built, two-dimensional life intact. Everything that we've built up so far that's successful and tidy and works. We can choose the blue pill. Or we can choose to start again, to risk our life for something we don't yet fully comprehend. But we have a possibility of comprehending if we put our lives on the line and live it. We can take the red pill. Jesus clearly points out there's no middle ground to be taken on this issue. Believe and receive eternal life, or perish. Believe and escape condemnation, or refuse to believe and stand condemned already. Now, I don't know whether you're one of these people who is like Nicodemus, who has a lot to walk away from to start again on a new three-dimensional spiritual experience. Or whether, like the Samaritan woman, you're someone who's been dreaming of such an opportunity. But I do know that this is a challenge at some point in our lives that we all need to face. But first of all, I just want us to go back to Nicodemus. Well, what did he do? Nicodemus appears two more times in John's Gospel. The first time is in chapter 7, where he is defending Jesus from the prejudice of his fellow Pharisees, who assume that because he comes from Galilee, that he cannot be a true prophet. And Nicodemus says, well, shouldn't we actually hear what he has to say before we judge him? And then the second time he appears is in John chapter 19 at Jesus' burial. Nicodemus brings along the burial spices to give Jesus a suitable and honourable burial. Jesus had been executed as a criminal. The criminals were given no special burial at that time. Nicodemus took a fortune of spices, and also he took his reputation and he put that on the line to go and identify himself with Jesus and make sure that he had a proper burial. Now I wonder if Nicodemus, seeing Jesus lifted up on the cross, had been reminded of what Jesus had said when he said, the Son of Man must be lifted up, just as Moses lifted up the snake in the desert. And I wonder if at that point he realized that just as the Israelites needed to place their faith in the snake to heal them from the poison of the snakes they've been bitten with, that he knew at that time that he needed to put his faith in Jesus and the power Jesus has to forgive our sin through his payment for it, through his death on the cross. So I ask you, will you take the blue pill and walk away from this challenge to be born again? Or will you take the red pill and see what this new spiritual life is that Jesus wants you to be born into? Thank you.